Right, so now we go to pheasant hunting season.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. We're back on page 127 of your commission book, pheasant hunting seasons. Again, we had a lot of discussions last commission meeting on respect to these recommended changes, which you moved forward as a proposal. You've received a lot of comment on all three aspects of this pheasant hunting season proposal. I'll run through each one of the three again, just to remind what they are. Certainly, Mr. Chairman, you can take these as you want, but there are three distinct points in this proposal. And for simplicity, it might be just easy to have a separate discussion and vote on each one of the three as you move forward, but certainly make that decision at the end here once we have done with your discussion. But so the three items that are listed that would be changes from last year for this moving forward for the pheasant hunting season. Right now, when the regular season opens, it begins at noon for the first 7 days, and then it switches to 10 a.m. for the remainder of the season. This recommended change on your proposal would state that the season would begin at 10 a.m. Central Time on the opening day, and that would be concurrent then for the entire season. So what this does is it changes the first week of the pheasant hunting season to begin at 10 a.m. like the rest of the season. The second change to the pheasant hunting season that's under consideration is in respect to the end date. And your proposal here is an extension to the end of January, beginning with the 2020 pheasant hunting season. So that would be this fall. A lot of discussion around this. You've heard a lot of input. You know, the primary impetus of bringing this forward as a consideration was truly focusing around pheasant hunting opportunity. Through the marketing work group and all the discussions that were had in terms of what could be done for opportunities to get both resident and non-resident pheasant hunters out in the field, looking at season structures, different things, this was one of those areas which we looked upon and brought forward as a recommendation that this could certainly provide pheasant hunting opportunity for folks out there. Right now, the current season structure has the pheasant season ending on the first Sunday of January. And so essentially going through January 31, for all intents and purposes, would provide the vast majority of January as part of that extension. We do believe that looking at all these proposed changes here, this is probably the most important one, in particular from the standpoint of providing opportunity for sportsmen and women out there to enjoy pheasant hunting and continue that pheasant hunting heritage in South Dakota. The third item that is up for consideration on your proposal has to do with the daily bag limit. As proposed right now, it would increase from 3 birds a day to 4 beginning on December 1 of the pheasant hunting season. But implementation of this would be for the hunting season of 2021, so that would be a year out from now. But I want to make sure that clarity and understanding is it wouldn't just be for the 2021 hunting season that it would start December 1st. That would be for all successive hunting seasons after that, that the daily bag limit would go from 3 to 4 beginning on December 31 of each respective hunting season. Again, this was an item that was discussed amongst you, the commissioners, and the work group, and this is really a result of looking at those available roosters, in particular late season, that would be there for hunting opportunities. It would give more chances for folks to hunt pheasants, to increase that daily bag limit by 1. Again, it's an opportunity standpoint. So those are the three recommended changes, or excuse me, the three proposed changes you have on your proposal from the current structure. Again, the first two would be implemented for this fall. The third one would be implemented in the fall hunting season of 2021. So with that, Mr. Chairman, we would turn it back over to you for discussion. We will certainly try to answer any questions that you may have, and we can go from there.
Thanks. I think we will take them separately. But to be clear, what's the date in September that the bag limit would go to 4?
So
not the year, but the day in September. Or, I mean, December. Sorry.
It would be December 1st.
Okay.
December 1st is when that would go into effect.
All right, so we can have a discussion about all of them, and then but we'll have independent votes, so the record is clear on all that. Any discussions, comments?
Mr. Jensen.
Commissioner Veese.
When we go to four birds on December 1st for the limit, that was because of some studies that we're having excess roosters in those later months when, so we could access those. But then we, by extending that season, wouldn't we be addressing availability for those excess roosters by adding that where we wouldn't have to add the extra time in January?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Tom.
Commissioner Bees, I think that's one way of certainly looking at it, and that could be a very good perspective. By having those additional days would certainly provide more opportunity for folks to be out there and have the ability to harvest some of those available roosters that still exist. The other part of that, though, it certainly would be, obviously not every hunter is going to have the ability nor some of the opportunities to fill a daily bag limit of four birds either, and some will even have a challenging time depending on location conditions to even fill three. I think the important part of all of that, though, is that whether it was three or four, even with the extension, from a population standpoint, it would not have a negative impact on subsequent years in terms of production and potential availability of hunting opportunities for the following season. What we know on pheasants and pheasant biology and the number of roosters that are needed when it comes to the breeding portion of their annual life cycle in the spring, even a rooster up to 10 hens is more than sufficient. So based on those numbers that exist out there, that certainly wouldn't have a negative impact on that. But you could certainly look at it from the standpoint that having additional days would certainly give some more opportunities to harvest some of those excess roosters that would be available out there.
Commissioner Spring.
Yeah. What with the roosters that are left in December, how many do you expect to survive till the next spring? I mean, is there quite a death loss during the winter? The reason of taking these extra roosters, I wonder, I just have a question about that. Is there a percentage to die off, or what's the story on that?
Through the chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Springs, every year during the winter, especially when you look at it from January through April, and I'm going to include April even though most of us would consider that spring, there's going to be a level of mortality on pheasants, both roosters and hens. Now, that level of mortality is certainly going to be increased depending on the primary factor of what are the weather conditions throughout that time frame. For example, when we had the winter of 96-97, you all remember very well what kind of conditions existed in South Dakota. The amount of snow depth, ice mixed in there, that prolonged ground cover, we had a high level of pheasant mortality during the winter. When you look at a quote-unquote normal winter, and I'm not sure how exactly we define a normal winter, but a winter where we do have snow, we do have ice conditions, but then we also have periods where it gets nicer and things open up again, they have availability to food, they're accessible to the ground, that mortality rate's going to be much, much less. What's interesting for pheasants, where some of the highest rate of mortality can happen, is not even necessarily right there during January and February, but can be later in the winter as well. When we get into some of those significant snowstorms or blizzards that happen like at the end of March or very early April, just because of the strength of them and probably related to the body condition that those birds are coming out of the winter, that's sometimes more of a stressful period for them than back in January and February. The other part of when we can see a high level of mortality is in the month of April, right going into spring, because you folks out on the land know better than any of us, habitat is very sparse when it comes to spring. You're not having your herbaceous grassland cover growth happening just yet. A lot of that can be flattened depending on the winter's conditions. So those birds are relying very heavily on woody habitat and maybe cattails that exist out there. So there's a lot of factors that play into what the mortality rate is going to be for those pheasants over a winter, and it's going to vary based on what those weather conditions are.
What's the lifespan on the roosters? I mean, are we talking 3 to 5 years, or is it less than that?
In general, you can look at the average lifespan of a wild rooster is about a year. Now, certainly there's going to be those that will live past a year, and there are going to be those that don't even make it to their first birthday. And that's the reality, in particular for roosters. Now, some of those hens can live more years than that. But in particular, when you think about the roosters, as you include the harvest aspect of it, you could on average say the average lifespan is about a year.
Any other comments, questions? Commissioner Olson, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've had a lot of conversations in the last month about this issue, and most reasonable people that I've had those conversations with, once you explain to them that, you know, about the aggressiveness of roosters versus hen and competing for forage and for habitat in those late season months, and trying to knock down those bird numbers for the roosters, then they kind of, the light comes on and they get it. You know, kind of maintaining our tradition of hunting of, you know, the 3 to 4 bag limit that still has people scratching their heads that just can't understand why would we be killing more roosters when we've constantly been saying the numbers are down. And then again, you re-explain the hen to rooster ratio that it's necessary for breeding. And again, the light comes on. So, I mean, I would be more inclined, and I'm in total favor of keeping the, or extending the season through the 31st of January so that it matches up with our hunting licenses and not so much with the 3 to 4 bird limit. But I procedurally, Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain if we were to amend that today, if that would require another 30-day comment period, because if so, I wouldn't make such a motion, but I would like to see if anybody else would support just leaving our bag limits the way they are and extending the season through the end of January to get those rooster numbers back under control. Keeping in mind that, you know, we can change this next year if we find that we've been successful and we've got that ratio back into an orderly fashion that we are looking for, that's our prerogative. And most of us will be here next year to reassess that and to vote on such a change if it were needed.
Well, I'm assuming that we could just deny the fourth bird proposal, and then that would be the end of that, at least for this year, and then next year could be reevaluated.
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm open to certainly talking about anything, but, you know, just looking at some of the figures that Commissioner Whitmire had put together and we got from staff, I mean, the main reason in my mind that we were looking at adding the fourth bird is the fact that we continually take less and less of the population every single year. I've gone back in time and created averages. In the 60s, we took 23% of the population, the 70s, 28, the 80s, 27, the 90s, 24, the 2000 to 2008 was 20%, and 2009 to 2018, we've taken 17%. Of the population. So we're down 35% of what we used to take in the 60s and 70s. And in 2018, the postseason harvest survey showed that we only took 13% of the available birds in the field. So at 2018, we are half of what we did in the 60s and 70s as far as shooting the available birds. So in my mind, we continue to have plenty of birds in the field, but we're taking less and less of them, which is, I thought, the reason we were looking at adding the fourth bird to provide additional motivation for people to get out and hunt, as well as have people come from around our non-residents come out and help fill those hotel rooms and restaurants in all our small communities that can certainly use every bit of economic development help that they can get. And on another note, we keep saying the birds are down, and I get they're down in some areas. The people I'm talking to, we're seeing roosters and very large broods everywhere that we're driving out here in eastern South Dakota. But the average population estimate from 99 to 2008 was a little over 8 million birds, and the average population from 2009 to 2018 is estimated at about 7.4 million birds. So that's about a 9% difference in population when people thought it was in the heyday to now. So even that illustrates that somehow the message is getting out there that we don't have a lot of birds, when in fact we are sitting on a fair amount of birds. We're not taking very much when we hunt. So again, circling back, that's why I thought we were looking at both adding the additional birds as well as create an additional opportunity into January to take advantage of the additional population, because last year we all lamented the fact that we didn't have as many hunters as we could have used. We had all kinds of birds and nobody to shoot them, and we went into the winter with a really large additional rooster population, and I think somebody threw out the estimate that we really could have taken an additional 500,000 birds last winter, last year, last season, and been sitting just fine. So I would be a little hesitant to take that fourth bird away, but certainly open for discussion. So thank you.
Yeah, and as we talked about a little yesterday, it's all those excess roosters available to be hunted that started this is the basis for it. And I'm not sure it's been communicated effectively yet, because as we discussed yesterday, when you look at a lot of the comments, that fact is not in there very often. And so somehow we need to continue or get that concept communicated better. Anyway, Commissioner Olson.
I'm just listening.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire. Following up on Commissioner Sharp's comments and on the numbers going back, now we've got over 100 years of pheasant hunting to fall back on, and looking at the numbers and how we did. And certainly if anybody wants to look into it, the department has those statistics right on the website, Great Neck Pheasant Statistics for South Dakota. And on that, you can look, and prior to 1999, we were harvesting somewhere leaving just 30 roosters per 100 hens, like Mr. Commissioner Sharp said. And then 99 to 2006, we got into 40 roosters per 100 hens. And in recent years, we're in the 50s. And so this whole discussion, I just want to assure everybody, wasn't about money and how to attract more people to hunt. It was how to put more birds in the bag, because we are ending the season with all this opportunity. Obviously, after advocating and working for more habitat and working on restricting roadside use of haying, we get the birds, and we get them to a level where we're looking at only harvesting maybe half of the roosters that we used to historically as a percentage of that population. And so all of these efforts that we're proposing are trying to get more birds in the bag for the hunters that are out there, because we are ending the season with more birds than what's necessary, and in many cases detrimental to the population of hens, because of the tendency for those roosters to drive the hens out of those feeding areas and causing them, greater mortality in the end. So said that, the fourth bird, I also felt that is trying to draw attention to December, predominantly because years like 2019, when we have our producers out there struggling to get the crop out, we've got so much cover with those unharvested corn fields and bean fields even, that that late season is really a much better opportunity because of that that later harvest than what we would have had historically with wheat and barley farming. So so we're just trying to adjust with the times. We're trying to adjust with the cropping changes and trying to draw people into thinking late season. And that's, I guess, my support for the fourth bird is just to call that out that, hey, come on, South Dakota, and if, you know, when you have a weekend available, that's a great time to get out there. And then to the 10 o'clock start, that enables people to get out in the morning, and maybe they can't make it in the afternoon. That's another opportunity. I guess if I were to back off on anything, it would be the January component. I guess I would like to discuss that and see where the rest of the commission is at. I do understand those concerns of driving the birds out of their habitat and roosting areas in the end of the day. I have seen that happen in inclement weather, where people have the day off of work and they're going to go hunting, and it may not be the best thing for the population. But on that, whether we reduce that to a 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something cut off for January, or bring that in a bit, I guess I'd like to have that discussion. Thank you.
More comments.
Chairman Jensen, Commissioner Locken here. I would weigh in a little bit and say I agree with Russ. If we if we're going to go to the longer season, you know, it's not just Northeast South Dakota; it's the whole state. We're representing everybody, and there is a whole tier of the state that's in the South, and they can probably handle a hunting better into January than we can. So I'd be willing to support that, and I would, you know, there's a lot of tradition and heritage go along with pheasant season, and hunters seem to want to stay with three birds, and I'd be inclined to, I don't think biology supports it, but I'd be willing to leave it at three birds, and just as to support them on what our hunters want.
Mr. Chairman.
Secretary Hepler.
All three proposals, you know, we move forward based on the information you heard from all the commissioners. And, you know, we've talked in-house, and, you know, many times commissioners ask, you know, what are your druthers on proposals? And, you know, and if there's a priority for us to go down, our priority is to be able to extend that season. We think that provides some really good opportunity. And I understand some of the concerns that commissioners from the Northeast are hearing. I've read the same ones. But that's the most clear opportunity to provide, I think, a lot of opportunity for resident hunters, because they'll be in a position to take advantage of it, but also for some of the non-resident hunters coming in. The 3 to 4, I understand the rationale for that, but if you're gonna focus on one thing as far as the department to truly make a difference, I would say extend that season. And you can talk about whether it's the end of the season, as presently stated, or something less than that. Along with that, I also caution the discussion around, you know, we want to cut that off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There again, I understand the concerns, commissioners, I do, but that doesn't make a lot of consistent sense to me. I'm just being frank with you. There's a lot of days I'm just sitting out there the middle of January, and it, you know, it could be 45 degrees outside 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't see a lot of purpose in doing that. So it's a lot cleaner for everybody, for enforcement officers and for the public, just to extend the days. And then if you're uncomfortable going all the way to the 31st and bank, you know, crank that back a little bit. But trying to pick a particular hour, whether it's 2 or 3 or 1 or 9, or I just don't know what that would really mean in the end. And so that'd be, you know, kind of a general comments, you know, and if Tom or Kevin or somebody else disagrees with that, please feel free to jump in.
Tom?
Mr. Chair, those are valid and good comments, Secretary Hepler. And, you know, there's been a lot of the discussion around, you know, later in January of flushing those birds out of the cover. And we certainly understand those concerns, because there are times where weather does get pretty inclement at mid-January, late January too. It was interesting, as we were talking about this just the other day again, about looking at time of the day, you know, please remember also that the shooting hours for pheasants is sunset. And so for those activities that do occur later in the afternoon, there would still be that time for birds to get into winter cover or thermal cover for that evening yet. I mean, so there would be that time at the end of the day, should birds do get flushed under a certain hunting situation, that they would still have light and availability to find the necessary appropriate cover for that particular evening yet as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Sharp.
I appreciate all the other commissioners weighing in on this and the additional comments from the secretary. So, you know, I am open to, you know, certainly changing this from 3 to 4. As you know, one commissioner noted, if that's what you know, the science is on our side, but if that's what these, you know, hunters kind of want, to stay with tradition, you know, I can kind of accept that. But this is another illustration of where people mistake science for fact, and anecdotal, or, you know, tradition for science. You know, our per mile pheasant survey is, you know, more of a random sample, and yet people really put a lot of weight in that. And yet when we go to the direct numbers, that's not accurate. So it just illustrates some of the challenges we as commissioners can run into in trying to balance out what the science and the data is telling us versus what our sportsmen feel better about. And I have showed people this data, and they don't believe it. So, but no, I'm totally open to discussing that, you know, and would have no problem supporting dropping that fourth bird. So I'm good either way.
All right. More comments. If there are no more comments, let's address the 10 o'clock starting time first. We'll need a motion one way or the other.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Whitmire.
I move to move the 10 o'clock start date forward.
Sharp will second.
Any discussion? Any discussion? If not, Rachel, call the roll, please.
Steve?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor, motion carries.
All right, next issue is extending the season to the end of January, starting this year.
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Olson?
I move to approve.
There, a second.
Larkin, second.
More discussion? Any discussion?
Aye, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Olson.
Thanks. I would just urge support of the season, just to, you know, it helps to streamline our license sales. Our licenses go through the end of January. It makes sense. And again, for anyone else out there, this can be changed back. This isn't something that can't be reevaluated in the future, and I think it's definitely worth giving a try. It gives opportunities for a lot of folks to get out and enjoy the outdoors as well through the extended season. So I urge your support.
More discussion? Not. Rachel, call the roll, please.
Yes.
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor, motion carries.
All right, so we get to the third part of this, which is increasing the limit starting next season, not this season, on December 1st to go from 3 to 4 rooster pheasants. We'll need a motion to accept or deny.
Sharp will move to deny.
Is there a second? Any more discussion? Any discussion? Not Rachel, call the roll, please.
Keith?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Nay.
Jensen?
Aye.
6-1, motion carries to deny.
All right. Next we go to number 28, private shooting preserve bag limits, and I want to take those as separate votes too. I mean, we'll have the first issue of are we going to allow unlimited as an option. We can address that and a vote on that, and then we can get to the fee issue. So, Tom, is that turning to you too?
First, Mr. Chairman, if we may, if we need to back up one more on related to the pheasant seasons. We also, you have the proposal on the resident pheasant hunting season, and that particular proposal was just to modify the start shooting hours to match up with the hunting season should have you passed that, and that would be to change to that 10 o'clock also time frame. So this would match up and coincide with the regular pheasant season for the resident only season, which is located on 129 of your package.
Okay, thanks for that reminder. So we'll need a motion for that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Prior to doing that, I should also mention that I floated the idea of starting the pheasant season a couple weeks earlier, because there sometimes isn't a lot going on. You know, we might be in a shoulder season for a lot of outdoor activity in early October, and I reached out to some local and a little bit of regional tourism groups and found very little support for that from that industry, and I was really quite surprised because I thought that would be another great way for these small towns to fill up their hotels and restaurants. So I just wanted to make note of that, and having said that, I would make a motion to approve the coinciding of the 10 o'clock start time on the resident opener.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, Rachel, let's vote on that, please.
Keith?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor, motion carries.
Okay, so let's go to the preserve unlimited option. Tom, is that you or is that Kevin? Or
Kevin will take the lead on this particular discussion at this point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Kevin.
Hey, good morning, commissioners. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Secretary Hepler, Kevin here, Deputy Secretary with the Game Fish and Parks. Great discussion there regarding the pheasant proposals. If I could have everybody turn to page 132 in your commission booklets, that's page 132. That is where the private shooting preserve action sheet is currently located. Couple things here regarding the proposal. As you heard in public testimony yesterday and today, there has been some proposed amendments to the current proposal, and the department supports those amendments. To kind of go over the sheet where it was throughout the 60-day public comment period, what we really proposed at first was an endorsement-type license, that established a new fee. So, for instance, if you had a 5-day shooting preserve license, the hunter on that preserve would have to go back and buy a $150 shooting without restriction license which at that time we set a fee of $150. Throughout the last 60 days, I've had the fortunate privilege to work with a lot of different preserves across the state, got to know a lot of folks, got to have a lot of great conversations with the industry, and we had an amendment presented to us yesterday that the department does support. I just wanted to go over that amendment in greater detail and just make sure all the questions that are out there are addressed regarding that amendment. So there would have to be a couple actions, one being the first, we'd like to amend the proposal as submitted during the July meeting. So the amendment, really what it comes down to is from the beginning of the hunting preserve season through the end of the statewide pheasant season, which you just changed here a little bit ago, which would be January 31st, this idea of harvesting an unrestricted number of roosters on a preserve could be met with some certain license stipulation combinations. So any resident preserve hunter holding a combination license with a habitat stamp, this is the resident piece, would then be allowed to harvest an unrestricted number of roosters on that preserve from the start of the preserve season, so September 1st, through the end of the statewide pheasant season, January 31st. So that's the resident piece, that combination license. The other piece of this is obviously the non-resident, and the non-resident, in order to harvest unrestricted number of roosters on a preserve, would have to hold the non-resident small game license, the 2 5-day, plus the habitat stamp. So in both situations, it's the higher tiered license that we offer in the state to harvest pheasants in the state. One of the things, too, I need to mention is that all hunters in that preserve group, that hunting group, shall meet the license requirement that I just talked about in order for them to harvest unrestricted. And that goes because there are party hunting options or opportunities out there. So every hunter in that hunting group must hold those license combinations to harvest unrestricted birds from September 1st through the end of the statewide pheasant season. One must remember, too, that we have a preserve season that runs through March 31st. So there would be 2 months there where there would be no unrestricted unrestricted harvest on hunting, on shooting preserves for the months of February and March. So that was the proposed change. It does look much different than what we presented in July. A couple things, though, there is no fee increase. There's no need to establish a new fee. There really is just, we're saying here, if the hunter holds this certain license combination and has that small game license plus a habitat stamp, or that combination license plus a habitat stamp, that would allow them then to shoot unrestricted birds during the months of September, October, November, December, and January. And then from there, February 1st on to the end of the preserve season, they would be under that 15 bird limit. So that's the amendment we'd like to make to the proposal, Mr. Chairman. I would need to have a motion to do so, but I would definitely have answer any questions if there were any at this time. Thank you.
Here's how I want to approach this. I don't think it'll probably change the result, but I think we should vote first on whether we're going to allow unlimited take on the preserves, and then we can have a vote on the fee. I think that's the clearest, just like we had an separate distinct vote on the last issues. And so let's have a discussion on the unlimited take and a motion on that, because there was some disagreement or concern about that the last go around. And then we'll get to the fee. Does anybody have any discussion or comments or questions on that?
No, I'm okay with that proposal, and I would certainly move to approve that.
All right. Is there a second on moving approval of unlimited take?
Second.
Any discussion? All right, so Rachel, let's vote on the unlimited take part of this, or unrestricted take, whatever it is.
Beats?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Schultz? Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor, motion carries.
Okay, so now we are at the fee part of it.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify something here. We do have a proposal in front of you. We would need to amend the current proposal that was out for the 60 days. John, can you please help me out here? I just want to make sure process-wise we're doing this correctly.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, again, John Katilnik, staff attorney. I'm just trying to follow along where you guys are at. So if we're looking at the action sheet in front of you, what I understood is that you took action on item number 2, which would be to amend the bag limits on individual hunting private shooting preserves to reflect no bag limit with an unrestricted small game license or unrestricted shooting preserve license. Was that your intent, or were you intending on maybe...
My intent was just the concept of allowing unrestricted taking, leaving for now the issue of fees associated with that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, though, the amendment to the proposal would require no conversation on fees. There would be no additional fee increase. There would be no fees above and beyond what we currently have in rule regarding our non-resident small game and our resident combination license. So that fee structure would not need to be amended, if you will, at this time.
Well, it's confusing because, and that's what I want to make clear, and so the record is clear. I mean, last time, and I think still today, there's the $150 fee that's been proposed. That's still sitting there, needs to have an action one way or another. Even though, frankly, that's hard to find, you know, because we've had this discussion about the fee part of this. And here's my concern, as we've discussed. The fee proposal that was made yesterday has never been seen by the public. The public has had no opportunity to comment on it. And I think they should. It might be the best option for moving forward, but the public should have an opportunity to comment on it. When you look at, I think a lot of people go to our website to see what's going to happen at the next meeting, and the subject of fee isn't really there. The notice for this public meeting is unclear at best about the fees. You know, and it's important to everybody, I think, as indicated by we ask the public for, I think, every fee that is going to be had or not had or eliminated down to $15 for a tent fee. We extended comment to today so those in favor of this proposal would have an opportunity to comment. The public has not had an opportunity to comment on the new fee proposal. And as you said, Kevin, it's different. So, but again, in some, you can find it somewhere, but the $150 fee is out there, which is different than what we have now. So, like any other proposal, that has to be, rejected or accepted. It can't just be left hanging there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely correct. And anytime we have fee discussions, we want to be open and transparent. And I feel in this case, we are actually taking a fee that was proposed back in July and essentially removing the concept of an additional fee or a new fee. And this would be narrowing the scope, if you will, to allow a different license combination to be used to get us at the same product or the same end goal. So I do understand what you're saying, and if the fee itself were to be changed, let's say that endorsement type license, that proposal's still on the table, and you're exactly right. We need to take action on that proposal. And that does include that $150 fee. The amendment to that proposal sheet, though, would be to remove that fee altogether and just say if the hunter possessed this certain
license combination type, they would be allowed to harvest unrestricted. And then again, that license combination would be a combination license for residents or a non-resident small game license. They would have to have a habitat stamp for both, that $25 habitat stamp for non-residents and $10 for residents.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I mean, my issue is not the substance of the fees as much, because that might be the thing to do. My issue is the process and giving the public the right to consider it and comment, because that's what we're supposed to do as a commission, number one, and I think the Interim Rules Committee of the legislature expects that of us. And I'm not sure, I mean, so the public isn't going to have a chance to comment on this new fee structure, which you could arguably say will get rid of effectively preserve hunting fees. So anyway, that's my concern, is the process. That's why I wanted to have two separate votes. And I don't know if it's going to change the result, but I don't think, if nothing else, I think the new fee, the proposal, has to be approved. And you cannot leave, the commission cannot leave unattended the proposed $150 fee, just like we can't leave anything else unaddressed that's been proposed. Like we just did away with the other upland game hunting preserve because that had been proposed and we needed to reject it. Right? Do you agree?
Yes, we do need to take action on the current proposal, which is there is a $150 endorsement license fee. We are asking you as a department to amend that proposal. We first need to amend it, and then we'd have to accept the new proposal as amended and vote on that again. So you are correct. We need two actions here by the commission. The first being amend the proposal to reflect the changes that were presented to us by the South Dakota Upland Outfitters Association. And then from there, we would have to take action on those amendments.
Okay, I agree. I mean, that's what we need to do. We need to have an amendment to the proposal, which I expect we will, and I expect the new fee may well be accepted. I will be opposed to that because I think the public should have a chance to comment it, and I think others think the public should have a comment. But I'm just one of eight votes, or seven, I guess, now. So we'll see. But that's good. So let's have more discussion, and then at some point, if somebody wants to make a motion to amend that fee proposal to what was presented yesterday, that's the motion we need now, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, discussion or comments?
Or I'll move to amend taking the $150 fee out of today's proposal. With that being said, also with Gary's comment about having to have public input on the fee, can we table that part of adding that fee till we have 30 days comment and address that at our next meeting?
Well, I think we can. I don't know what John is going to say, but I think we can, which is another reason I'm glad that we got these separated. But then I'm sure that there's going to be timing issues with regard to Rules Committee and others, but certainly we can separate them. But in, you know, it's really not the commission's fault, if you will, that we have whatever timing issues we have. I don't think that trumps our responsibility to give the public the chance to consider this and comment on it. That's my issue. So, John, I can see you want to jump in.
So, yeah, obviously this is a procedural. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it, because right now, as everything stands, the commission has already voted to allow unrestricted take on shooting preserves. So that's where we're at right now. It's messy now that we have this alternative amendment to the proposal. So my suggestion would be is that you make an amendment to this proposal, which is already, the commission has already voted to allow unrestricted hunting, in that amended proposal, when you vote on it, I would suggest that amendment negate that vote, if that makes sense, so that you guys are voting on the one issue. The one issue is that new proposal.
Well, we can, John, here's how I look at it, and you tell me if I'm wrong. We've now passed a motion allowing the activity of unlimited shooting, but now we're addressing what is the fee going to be for that activity.
And that's okay. So if the
whether it's elk hunting or deer hunting, I mean, we've now allowed elk hunting as an example, but now we're going to set the fee for how much does it cost to go elk hunting.
Correct. So then I think the correct proposed amendment would be the piece where it is the talking about the combinations of licenses. That would be the amendment to the existing proposal saying we've now allowed unrestricted harvest on these preserves. What is the requirement to allow unrestricted harvest? And if I understand the proposed amendment, it would be that combination of the resident combo license or the non-resident small game license.
So
that
I agree.
That would be the proposed amendment to this.
To the existing right. $150 proposal.
Right.
And then we can have that discussion. But to Commissioner Beese's point, that proposal, then we can have a debate about whether that needs to go out to the public for 30 days. And that's, I think it should, because we ask the public on all fees. But we can have that discussion. If somebody wants to make that motion, here's how I look at it, John, you tell me if I'm wrong. Somebody can make that motion to amend the proposal to what it was yesterday in a place of the 150. If that passes, then we can have a discussion about what's the consequence of that. Are we sending it out for 30 days of comment, or will the commission vote today to approve it as a final proposal, right?
Correct. That's how I understand.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Sharp.
I agree that the public needs to have certainly ample opportunity to weigh in on the various issues we discussed. I guess my sense is that this is such a narrow issue, and the discussion on the fee, I don't see anything on the fee that's going to prevent somebody from being able to hunt. So I guess I don't see any need to put this out 30 days because you're right. Timing is not the commission's issue, but at the same time, I do not want to do anything that would restrict these preserve operators' ability to, you know, get customers in for this fall season, especially with the year we're having for people having to cancel and, the COVID things going on. I think anything we can do to help these people, I think, is not the wrong thing or the wrong approach. So I see no reason to table this for 30 days on that. And if we need to make a motion on the amendment, I've got no problem making that.
All right. So then we need a second to the motion.
Second.
Then we can have discussion on substituting what was presented yesterday for the 150 that was already out there. Kevin, we're doing it right so far, aren't we?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add, the fee of the current non-resident small game is 121 plus the habitat stamp. So we are reducing the cost to shooting an unrestricted number of pheasants on a preserve. I mean, I just want to throw that out there as well, because the way it was presented back in July was they would have to hold already an established license, either preserve license or a non-preserve license, and then buy this endorsement. So back to Commissioner Sharp's comment there, yes, he is very correct. We are reducing the monetary requirements of a hunter to harvest unrestricted number of birds on a preserve.
Yeah, and just again to be clear, I'm not saying ultimately that's not the right thing to do. I'm just talking about involving the public on the way there because I think they have a right to it. So, and I appreciate what Commissioner Sharp is saying. Commissioner Olson, looks like I can't tell whether you want to talk or not.
No, I mean, I'm slightly confused, and I'm just going with the cadence here, but this is, to me, for somebody that spent nearly a decade in the legislature, is a dream come true. We get to increase revenue without increasing fees, so I'm fully supportive of keeping this moving. But.
Yeah, and that might all be true. It might also be true, somebody could address this, but it might also be true with this new proposal. I mean, why would somebody pay also the $85 current preserve fee? Some will think there's no reason to do that. And so now the fees are being reduced, especially in comparison to what was proposed in July. And whether or not that's true or the right thing, again, that's not what I'm here talking about. But, you know, this whole subject is near and dear to many, and including the public. So,
Gary, just one quick comment. This proposal's been out there for public comment with that fee structure in place. So there has been public time to comment on the fee being proposed. Do we not have the leeway as commissioners to be able to change that without having to go back to public comment during our meeting? Because that fee's been out there for public comment already.
Yeah, so I have two perspectives on that. One is, in some sense, it has been out there, but that's when I commented earlier. I mean, a lot of people go to our website. If you go to our website, that fee, I don't find it there. And if you look at the public notice for this meeting, there's 8 pages, and it's not there. Unless somebody's going to correct me, and I hope they do, but I know that it's been listed on the official, whatever that's called, John. Is that the
public notice? The public notice?
Yeah. No, not the public notice, but the proposed rule change. You sent that to me, but I don't think if you look at the public notice on the website for this meeting, I didn't see it there. Maybe somebody will correct me. So that's one part of this. The other part is, can we change things? Sure. And we often do, but we've made some very minor changes and then thought that didn't come within a fair change without sending it back out to the public. So it's always a matter of judgment and discretion, I think. Kelly, it looks like you want to say something.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to do this, Gary, because the process is clearly in the purview of the commission. It's not in the purview of GF&P. And all I can say as just a listener, it's rather confusing, even for me, who understands the process pretty well. But I also, Gary, I've been on it for a number of years. We had this conversation before. I respect the fact you feel very strongly about, you know, practical public notice, which is really what this whole discussion is around. It's not a technical, it's around practical, and I get that. The only thing that helps me, you know, to go along that road, though, is that, you know, the businesses which we are trying to impact with this have all been notified of this. There's been a lot of opportunity for discussion among, you know, the businesses themselves about this. And I would hope then that they would understand what it means to their business plan and those users coming in. Now, if we just change this in the dark of the night without reaching out to the businesses and talking to them directly, I don't understand a little bit more. But there again, I always want to be careful here. I'm not second guessing you on this or the commission. You're going to do what you think's practical, because in the end, I have full confidence this is going to move forward one way or the other. The only other thing I will say, though, and I think I'm okay saying this, is that, you know, when Sal's talking about losing those hunters, that's real. And that's real to small town, whether you're in Highmore or someplace else, where he processes birds. And so I have to trust the fact himself says this would potentially help him market more hunters coming into the state in this time of uncertainty. I think that's important. So then you balance that to the health of maybe some of these smaller communities, smaller businesses, to more of a philosophical, practical notice discussion, which I know you've been consistent on since the time you've been chair. And I don't know how to balance that out. I can't. I'm not a voting member. But that's also what I think Commissioner Sharp is trying to get to. And with that, I'll, you know, thank you respectfully, Gary. I'll back out of this.
Yep, no, and I appreciate your comments. But, you know, and when we change the elk rules, we ask the public about it, not just elk hunters. And then we change fishing rules. We don't just ask fishermen. We ask the public about it. And as you just said, I mean, that's always been my view of this, that the public is entitled to know in advance what we're doing and weigh in. So, but I've said that probably too many times already. So,
Mr. Chair?
John?
Just for your statutory reference, in terms of how the IRRC views this kind of change or would potentially view this kind of change, if you look at SDCL 26-4.7,
yes,
that's the authority that the IRRC looks at when they're reverting rules. And so if we were to make a substantial change to a proposed rule, they could revert it. But there's a specific exemption there saying unless that substantive change came as a result of the public hearing, testimony taken during that public hearing. So I would submit to you that we've met that criteria, at least as far as from a statutory perspective, that I would feel comfortable enough in front of the IRC to say that this change is the result of public testimony, i.e. through letters, through public testimony, through our entire ESP preserve operator conversations we've had prior to this meeting. So if you want to take a look at that statute for what it's worth, again, procedurally wise.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too. It's just the public wasn't part of it because they didn't know about it. So, but anyway, at some point we'll have to vote. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, Rachel, let's vote. So we're now voting on substituting the proposal we got yesterday for the $150 fee that was passed and sent to the public in July.
Bees?
Aye.
Locken? Locken?
No, I think we have to go back to public.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
No.
5-2.
All right, so that passes. Now we need a motion to approve the fee proposal as amended. Right, John?
Sharp will move.
Locken second.
Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, Rachel, let's vote.
Heath?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
No.
6-1 passes as amended.
Okay. So that takes care of that subject, right? All right.